This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. In case you're wondering about the introductory music, all will be revealed shortly. Now, my travels through the city this week led me to St. Andrew by the Wardrobe, and here, church watcher Judy Stevenson shared her insights.
This is the church of St. Andrew by the Wardrobe. By the Wardrobe because a little way along the road there is Wardrobe Place, where the king's wardrobe was housed from the 13th century until the Great Fire of London of 1666. St. Andrew is the patron saint of Scotland. St. Andrew was martyred on a saltire. A saltire is a cross, a diagonal cross. And on the Union flag, his is the blue and white bit, as opposed to the saltire of St. Patrick of Ireland, which is the red and white bit.
Yeah. Whereabouts in the City of London geographically are we?
It is south from St. Paul's Cathedral, and it is slightly north of Queen Victoria Street. So it is slightly raised up. It is on a hill. There is a street even called St. Andrew's Hill, and it's quite steep. So you come down from the cathedral and you come up from Queen Victoria Street, and it stands proud. It is really very impressive.
Yeah.
If you think in terms of a medieval castle, which is perched on a hill, in effect, this church is perched on a hill.
Yeah. Also, when you come at it from the north, you sort of have to find it through alleyways and so on. So it sort of gives that element of surprise almost.
There is that element of surprise with practically every city church. This one was rebuilt by Wren after the Great Fire. This church survived being messed around by the Victorians, but this church was gutted during the Second World War.
And as we look around, it does seem more 20th century and modern because it was burnt out in the Blitz.
That's right. So the sword rest is still one of the original artefacts of this church. Equally, near the creed by the altar, there is a statue of St. Andrew, which is dated 1600. The other stuff, the wonderfully carved pulpit and the font, they both come from St. Matthew Friday Street. That church had been demolished because there was no need for it, because the railways were enabling people not to live in the city, but in the suburbs. What they've retained, though, over the altar are those three goblets with flames above them. And that is really a Wren signature. When you see one of those urns, you know that that church was rebuilt after the Great Fire.
Do you know anything about if this is a parish church, a guild church?
This is a parish church.
During the week, St. Andrew's is open as a place of Anglican worship, but on a Sunday, the church is used by a very different group of Christians. For here, the parish church of St. Gregorius meet. And now, the opening music will make a lot of sense.
I'm Father Abraham Thomas. I used to be the vicar of the parish, but now I predominantly work in India, in my mother church, but I do the international relations of the head of my church.
What's the name of the church?
Internationally, it is known as Indian Orthodox Church, and in the World Council of Churches, we have registered as Malankara Orthodox Syrian Church. That is the traditional name.
And where does St. Gregorius come into it?
St. Gregorius is the first Indian-born saint of our tradition, and following the Orthodox tradition, we have canonized the Indian saint in 1947. The saint passed away in 1902. All over the world, in our diaspora, Saint Gregorius is like a patron saint.
Do you know who founded the Indian Orthodox Church?
Back in India, we attribute our presence to Saint Thomas the Apostle of our Lord Jesus Christ. Our spiritual heritage and tradition is as old as Christianity, so it goes back to the first century. We wouldn't have any physical evidences to present about St. Thomas, the Apostle of Christ, coming to India. But it is quite obvious that it is a historically proven fact that in the 4th century there was strong presence in the southwest coast of India. And we have the Jewish presence in India going back to the time before Christ. So obviously the tradition exists.
Do you know how long you've all been worshipping in this building?
Well, we started off in Indian YMCA, and then in 1979 we moved in here.
Yeah.
And the Church of England was gracious enough to spare the place for us. We still retain, and in 2004 we bought this church hall called St. Peter's Hall in Broccoli, and we converted it to our church internally, and we have consecrated that as an Orthodox church.
How often do people worship here? Is it every weekend?
We have services here every Sunday, starting at 9:15.
And what do you feel it's like to worship in this building? It's a very old building.
This is a heritage place, obviously, and we are thankful to the Church of England and for the local council or whoever who is responsible for it, because we are quite aware of the heritage of this building and the long-standing history, at least a continuous history starting from the 11th century, and then in the 14th century, naming this place as St. Andrew the Wardrobe, and one of the 51 designed by Christopher Wren himself. And for 15 long years, Shakespeare was a member of this parish. So those kind of heritage we hold closer to our heart. And when our people go on vacation to India, obviously they will boast over it. Right.
So it's a good thing.
It is, indeed.
What your favourite thing about this church is? What
I find it interesting, if you go up to the gallery, there are two memorials there. One to William Shakespeare. Just beyond this window, you've got Playhouse Yard, where Shakespeare had a theatre. And there is also a memorial of a contemporary of his called John Dowland, who was a musician. And he composed and played the lute, and all of that is up there. So that I find really exciting.
Why is he here, the musician?
Because he
worshipped here.
Well, he worshipped here, and he's a contemporary of Shakespeare's. He will have composed for the theatre as much as for the church.
Can you describe the church, the colours of it, and the layout of it?
It's a very light church, and this church, fortunately, has no stained glass in it. Sir Christopher Wren abhorred stained glass. He wanted to rejoice in natural light.
There's a little bit at the back.
It's very light. It's painted white. You've got a very simple corniced ceiling with these rosettes of plaster work and the putty. And you have got the crowd, because it's the Church of England.
Yeah.
And then you've got the two galleries, which originally will have been built for servants. The congregations are small now, and in these galleries you've got the library of Zion College.
Also, this one seems so much more symmetrical than some of the others. Clearly has two aisles. It's got a main nave, if you like, with a barrel-shaped roof. But the aisles seem to be blocked off. Do we know what's behind panels?
Behind that one is the kitchen and offices.
Oh.
And behind this one you've got St. Anne's Chapel.
But it sort of closes it off a bit, because it would feel a lot bigger, I think, if they didn't have those panels.
Yes,
so they must
would
have done that post-war.
absolutely. Yeah.
And another thing is the wood is very light in this church.
Yes.
Whatever it is a very warm,
yes,
caramel colour, isn't it, which, yeah, gives it that sort of warmth to it. So the next thing I want to mention, looking around, other things we can see are these banners that
these
are flying.
Banners.
And one of them, one up behind you actually, is the apothecaries.
Yes. The apothecaries are around the corner, and they use this church for events that require a church service. The banner in the middle on this side is the Worshipful Company of Mercers. The Mercers are very involved with this church, and they are contributing towards the overhaul of the central heating system. Few church watch here in the winter. In fact, if you're coming in the winter, I advise you to wear a lot of clothes. It is nicknamed St. Andrew by the Fridge because it is desperately cold.
And maybe that's because, and this is another feature of it, it doesn't have anything built up against it. It's one of the city churches
that stands proud. It's got the wind whistling round all four sides. It has had no central heating installed.
That would explain why the Indian Orthodox Church, who use the building on Sundays, have a line of gas heaters along the central aisle to keep the congregants warm during their long and entirely musical services.
I wondered if you could describe the atmosphere of the community here.
Well, definitely this is a diaspora church, and invariably they miss their homeland. So on a Sunday, it is a religious matter for them to worship. But alongside of it, obviously, there is a social dimension for their gathering together. So every single Sunday after the service, they will have Indian delicacies and spicy food served together. So it is cordial. It is just like sharing many things from back home and their struggle to settle in here. And there, probably our first set of migration was after the World War II. Mm-hmm. So the experienced hands will be sharing good things to the younger generation or the new migrants. So it is a mix of everything, actually. And generally speaking, there's a spirit of mutual help and supporting each other, and a good Christian spirit is moving, which is a good witness for all of us.
If somebody were to come here for the first time, what would their experience be?
Basically, what they would face as a hindrance or a problem is the language, because we do have our Eucharistic service translated to English, but we don't do that quite often. So probably Malayalam, the vernacular language, will be sounding something extremely strange for them.
What is the language? Malayalam?
Malayalam. Malayalam in itself, the word is a palindrome. You can read from both the sides. But Malayalam is a language of the southwest coast of India. It is a place called Kerala. The tourist logo of the place is God's Own Country. It's a beautiful place with the lagoons, lakes, water, mountains, and paddy fields.
So it's a regional language to Kerala.
It is a regional language. It's one of the thousands of dialects of India.
And many Christians live there.
In Kerala, we are about 22 to 25% is Christian.
If you could sum up in a nutshell this church, what would you like to say about it?
I think as you come into this church, you see very clearly the intimate connection between the governance of the city, the livery companies of the city, and the churches in the city. I think that you can't consider any part of the city without considering the churches and the livery companies. Yeah. And I think this is well illustrated here.
Yeah. What atmosphere do you think this church has? They're all different, aren't they?
Yes. This one's quite austere.
It is a bit. It's not particularly heavily decorated. Not that many of them are necessarily.
No, it's it is an austere church. There's no messing about here.
The austere atmosphere certainly changes into something quite different when the church is used by the parishioners of St. Gregorius.
Is there anything else you want to tell me about the church that you feel like people need to know?
Hospitality is a Christian virtue. And in the Bible it says that by offering hospitality to the strange faces, people became hospitable to God himself. So in Sanskrit, in Indian tradition too, there's a dictum saying Atithi Devo Bhava, which means that consider your guest as God. So we follow the same principle, and then nobody will feel alien or a stranger in our church.
It was St. Andrew by the Wardrobe that led me to want to do this series in the first place, to go beyond the history and the architecture and get to know how the buildings are used today. Because this is such a fine example of how a rather austere, although beautiful looking church, comes alive through the people who use it.